Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Danielle Kael, who is a policy analyst in the Open Technology Institute at the New America Foundation, where she works on technology policy and how it intersects with broader domestic and foreign policy concerns. Her main areas of focus are U.S. broadband policy and internet freedom, and she has an article with Kevin Bankston at CNN, A Year After Snowden, The Real Costs of NSA Surveillance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Danielle Kael.
Thank you for having me.
And Danielle, the German parliament have announced that they will be investigating the NSA's tapping of Chancellor Merkel's phone. And a recent BBC World Service poll on public opinions in 24 countries found views of the United States have deteriorated sharply amongst citizens in Spain, Germany, and Brazil, where extensive U.S. surveillance activity has been exposed. But you're bringing to the table in your CNN article, A Year After Snowden, The Real Costs of NSA Surveillance, the point that the real casualty has been U.S. businesses.
That's correct. I think that there's definitely a lot to be said for the damage that the NSA surveillance has done broadly in terms of our perception around the world. But it's important also that because so much of what the NSA does relates to the technology industry and telecommunications networks, that's a huge part of the United States economy, and that's a very important and growing part of it. And what we're seeing is, in the past year, we're seeing this erosion of trust, this tendency to move business to non-U.S. companies because they're seen as safer. We're seeing policy proposals from foreign countries that would impact U.S. business. And so one of the real costs, and that's not really being discussed, is that economic one.
Well, just to touch on the BBC World Service poll, views of the United States have deteriorated amongst citizens of Spain, where negative views have spiked up 19 points. In Germany, they've spiked up 18 points, and Brazil up 15 points. And these are, of course, countries where the extensive U.S. surveillance activity has been exposed by Edward Snowden and of course, greeted with a great deal of outrage. So, obviously, in terms of soft power, if that's the right term, the U.S. is taking a hit. But in terms of the bottom line for big corporations, give me a sense of the hits that they're taking.
One really good example would be in December. The Brazilian government decided to award a multi-billion-dollar contract for a new fleet of fighter jets to Saab. About a year before that, the front-runner for that contract was Boeing, an American company. And there were a number of reports from former and current Brazilian government officials that one of the key factors was the impact of NSA surveillance. I mean, simply put, the Brazilian government has a lot of mistrust right now for both the American government and U.S. companies. And so that's in and of itself, that's a giant loss.
Well, wasn't this very similar to why the Germans are looking into Angela Merkel's, the tapping of her phone? Because I believe, wasn't it Lula and both Dilma Rousseff, the current president, were tapped by the NSA?
That's correct. And that is a clear example. And in Germany, we're seeing proposals for this idea of email made in Germany, that email communications could travel only within the country to be safe from NSA spying. And we're seeing a lot of proposals also from countries, including Germany and Brazil, for something called data localization, which is there's a number of different varieties of these proposals, but they would require that companies store the data on the citizens of those countries within the countries. And the idea is that brings them under the jurisdiction of various privacy laws and is somehow safer. Those proposals are both a technical challenge for businesses to implement, and also they come with a huge compliance cost often. It costs a lot of money to duplicate server infrastructure in country. If you violate it and there are big fines, that can take a big hit. Or if it means that you can't operate in a country because you can't meet their local laws. So all of those are also big impacts.
So my understanding, though, is that the real casualty at the end of the day might well be the international regime that regulates the internet that is largely dominated by the United States, and countries like China, Saudi Arabia, and Russia all of whom who want to have more surveillance, not that Saudi Arabia doesn't already have total control over its citizens who have absolutely no rights. China controls its own internet, and Putin has moved now to take over the internet in Russia. All of them are complaining about the idea that the U.S. dominates the internet and therefore is able to bug everybody, and that has become an excuse for these repressive regimes to have a new internet regime. And I believe at the last conference in Doha, the U.S. and the supporters of the U.S. regime, the current status quo, you know, had quite a battle on their hands. But now it seems like the repressive regimes have been handed a gift.
That's correct. And I think one thing, we lead in the article with the economic cost, but we've been doing a study on all of these impacts to our economic interests, our foreign policy, and also internet security. And I think that that second piece, the foreign policy piece, relates very much to this question of internet governance. And you're correct that for a long time, the United States has had a sort of privileged role in internet governance, and we've been a leader on this concept of internet freedom, something that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton promoted a lot when she was in office. And it's this idea of preserving an open and free internet that is governed by the multi-stakeholder interests, so governments and corporations and citizens. There have always been opponents to that, though these countries like Russia and China and Iran, and they're completely emboldened by the Snowden revelations. You know, we've lost a lot of the moral high ground, and they're gaining a lot of allies. And, you know, you'll see that when we're spying on our own friends, on people like the German chancellor, that that's going to make it a lot easier for some countries to consider flipping who their allegiances are. And so in the coming year, we'll see a lot, I think, of interesting things happen on the internet governance scale and in terms of whether or not the U.S. is able to maintain or rebuild its credibility or whether or not we start to see those other interests win over.
Again, I'm speaking with Danielle Kail, who's a policy analyst in the Open Technology Institute at the New America Foundation, where she works on technology policy and how it intersects with broader domestic and foreign policy concerns. Her main areas of focus are U.S. broadband policy and internet freedom, and she has an article with Kevin Bankston at CNN, A Year After Snowden, The Real Costs of NSA Surveillance. So let's go to the costs that you've researched, and that are the economic costs. I take it the cloud computing industry are the ones that are taking a huge hit. And there, clearly, the U.S. was in the lead globally. Companies like Amazon, who, you know, maybe they own the Washington Post, but normally they're associated with online purchases. They've been investing enormous amounts in this. And give us a sense of the damage that's been done to the U.S. cloud computing industry.
Yeah. So the United States has been one of the leaders in cloud computing for the past few years. And this is an industry that's growing quickly, that's very competitive. So the next few years, either way, we're going to be sort of fiercely competitive, and U.S. companies were going to fight very hard for a larger market share. More and more people and businesses and governments even are relying on cloud storage. But the idea, one of the main ideas behind cloud storage, is that you trust the company that you are giving your data to, that they're going to store it, that they're going to keep it safe and secure. And so what we learned about NSA surveillance and about the access that the U.S. government might have to that data has made it much harder for American companies to convince their customers that their data is really safe. And so there have been a couple of economic forecasts that have said anywhere between $20 billion and $180 billion in the next 3 to 5 years. And that's based on this assumption of lost market share as customers not only turn away from the cloud computing industry, from the American cloud computing companies, but also as there's new business that, you know, the people that don't store their data in the cloud yet either don't actually make the move because they don't trust it, or when they do decide to store their data in the cloud, they go to foreign companies. And a couple of surveys have come out asking ICT decision makers what they're thinking, and a lot of them are far more concerned than they were a year ago about where their data is stored, about who has it, about who has access to it, and about what the rules are that govern access to that that data. So I think that's definitely a major industry to watch. And of course, there will be a lot of other kind of related things having to do with web hosting and other ICT industries that are also going to feel the crunch, but it's going to be the cloud computing industry that feels it the most acutely.
And in your article at CNN, Danielle Kale, a year after Snowden, the real costs of NSA surveillance, you point out that the NSA has carried out offensive hacking operations such as spoofing Facebook and LinkedIn to perform man-in-the-middle attacks to insert malware onto targets' devices. I mean, it seems to me that what's happening here is that the U.S. is being cast as the villain, and there's certainly a lot of guilt, but there's an awful lot of guilt to go around, particularly when you consider that Putin's crony, you know, the Siloviki, they're called, the intelligence people that now have taken over most of the economy in Russia. Putin's former chief of staff now owns VKontakte. They forced out the original owner, and he's gone into exile. So now the Kremlin now controls Russia's Facebook, but the extent to which the NSA has been screwing with Facebook over here and LinkedIn, give us a rundown on that.
So I think there's two pieces to what the NSA has done in terms of internet security with companies. One piece is going to them privately and quietly and saying, you know, give us access to your data or build a backdoor into your product so that we can access what we need, which is working directly with them. And the evidence of that makes people not trust the companies. And then the second piece is what you just referenced, which is in addition to working with them, they're also, you know, we've learned, pretending to be these companies. And that's, by all accounts, without the knowledge of a company like Facebook or LinkedIn. They don't know that the NSA is spoofing them in order to perform these kinds of attacks. So they're hitting them on both sides, right? They're working with them privately, which has come out, which makes people not trust the companies. They're also pretending to be them, which makes people not trust the products that they make, because you know, we don't know if this is actually Facebook or if this is some kind of clever malware. So that's really bad. I think it is important, as you mentioned, to keep in mind also that the NSA is not the only national security agency doing this. This is not and I think the revelations in the past year have shed light on what's happening in the UK and in other Western countries as well. This is not uncommon. I think the scale at which it's happening in the National Security Agency here in the U.S. Is unprecedented. And I think it's also, you know, the fact that the United States has both portrayed itself as a leader on internet freedom and on a lot of these issues before, and because so many of the tech companies are based here, that the impact of this particular information is so large.
So that would explain, I take it, the meetings that have taken place in the White House by these heads of these big tech giants like Facebook and others that have shown up, I think, on a number of occasions at the White House, clearly lobbying for some changes.
Yeah, after the evidence, the leaks came out about the spoofing of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg called President Obama directly, and that led to one of these meetings. There have been several over the course of the year. And the message from a lot of these companies has been that that reforms are not happening quickly enough, that this is directly damaging their business interests, that their customers don't trust them, and that this needs to be fixed. And one of the big things that they've called for, in addition to reforming a lot of the programs, is transparency. They've said to the government, we want to be able to disclose this information, to tell people about what's happening, because that's one of the first steps towards regaining their trust. The second piece is also, of course, you know, very important beyond transparency, which is the actual reform of the laws that govern these programs and sort of, you know, seeing things change in that direction. And the companies have said very clearly and together, which I think is also important, that, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks and Microsofts, which are often rivals, have come together to make this call because they realize how important it is. They've said, you know, we need to fix this or this is going to have a huge impact on our business.
So, Danielle Kale, what's your sense then of the USA Freedom Act that passed the House recently? It was watered down considerably, the Senate version, this has actually led Senator Leahy, who's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, to basically say that he was deeply disappointed in the bill that's come out of the House. Of course, it will be reconciled with a stronger bill in the Senate. What's your sense of how much the USA Freedom Act, given that it's still in the works, has done. What has it done to address what you're talking about here?
I think the USA Freedom Act addresses a modest number of the issues. It's a modest reform bill. It does look at the bulk collection issue, and it does have some other important provisions. It's a start. It's certainly not a full-blown solution to these problems. For starters, because obviously, although I think there's a lot of optimism that it may be strengthened after the Senate looks at their version, it still will be watered down from what I think a lot of advocates and a lot of the companies would like to see. But it also doesn't address sort of a range of other issues, and that includes the collection of information of non-Americans and information abroad, or a lot of some of the related transparency issues, and it doesn't address a lot of the security challenges. So we have a lot of work to do to convince people that the NSA is not breaking internet security by undermining encryption standards and by inserting backdoors and all of these things. So there's a beginning. But it will be a long summer and a long year of more reform before I think you'll see people really happy that we've addressed a lot of the issues that have come up in the past year.
Well, just in closing, though, Danielle Kale, if you point out in your article at CNN a year after Snowden, the real costs of NSA surveillance, that the U.S. cloud computing industry is projected to lose between $25 billion and $180 billion in the next 3 to 5 years as customers become increasingly concerned about where their private data is stored. Now, when you consider how much money that U.S. taxpayers invested in the National Security Agency and in the intelligence world in general since 9/11, it's been extraordinary. So it just seems to me quite amazing here that we would spend billions and billions of taxpayers' money on increasing the capabilities of the NSA to the point where I think just because they were able to do things, they did things somewhat recklessly, and they've backfired so hugely that U.S. business, just one part of U.S. business, could lose up to $180 billion. Doesn't that strike you as being an incredible irony that we're basically shooting ourselves in the foot twice?
I think that it definitely is an incredible irony. It's not to downplay the importance of national security, but that doesn't mean that we should, if we can do it, we should do it. That we spent, if we spent this money in these systems, that we should be collecting everything. And one of the keys going forward to sort of avoid this kind of situation is that the National Security Agency can't be making these decisions in secret, in a vacuum, without considering all of the other interests. And that, I think, one of the big lessons of the past year has been that, of course, this intersects with our economy, and also with even, the foreign policy pieces is actually other parts of the U.S. government and the good work that they're trying to do. So making sure that going forward there's much better oversight and that these decisions are made in a manner that actually weighs and balances how they impact other areas of U.S. interest, I think that's critical going forward.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Danielle Kale.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Danielle Kale, who is a policy analyst in the Open Technology Institute at the New America Foundation, where she works on technology policy and how it intersects with broader domestic and foreign policy concerns. Her main areas of focus are U.S. broadband policy and internet freedom, and she has an article with Kevin Bankston at CNN, A Year After Snowden, The Real Costs of NSA Surveillance. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the $15 minimum wage rise in Seattle and its likely impact on the rest of the country.